This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last month, Olympic diving champion Greg Louganis became the first prominent athlete to disclose that he contracted HIV from a gay relationship. Louganis has written a memoir that elaborates on how his public image has contrasted with his real life. It's called Breaking the Surface. Louganis won 2 gold medals in 1984 and picked up 2 more in 1988. Those 88 gold medals were remarkable, considering what happened in the preliminaries. During one dive on the descent from his somersaults, he hit his head on the diving board. He emerged from the water bleeding. A doctor stitched Louganis's wound, and he was back on the board minutes later. Neither the doctor nor the millions of people watching knew what Greg Louganis had found out 5 months earlier. He was HIV positive. I asked Greg Louganis about his energy level and mental state during the Olympics.
The lead up to that was probably more difficult because, you know, I had to go to work out. I was in training. I was harboring this secret that I couldn't tell anyone, eventually telling my coach. It was very, very difficult. If I didn't have a workout, then I'd stay home with, you know, depressed and pull the covers over my head. Once we got to the Olympics, you know, you go to the Olympics or even the Olympic trials, you are so focused. You know, I knew the job that I had to do and I had to do it and I had to, you know, be prepared both physically and mentally.
At what point in your dive did you realize the dive was going bad?
As I was taking off the board, I knew that my weight was back towards the board as I was taking off the board. I was afraid that I'd hit my hand on the board. I wasn't afraid of hitting my head because I didn't think I would be that close. So when I came out, I came with my arms very close to my body so that, you know, so that they would miss the board. But then I heard this big hollow thud, and then I went crashing in the water, and I realized that I had just hit my head.
So when you realized that you hit your head, what went through your mind?
Embarrassment is probably the first thing that, you know, first emotion that I felt. And then, you know, I got rather angry with myself. I didn't want anybody to touch me. I pushed people away and held my hand over my head to try and keep the blood in.
One of the big controversies that surround your story now is that you didn't tell the doctor who took care of you at the Olympics that you were HIV positive, even though you were bleeding. Why didn't you tell him?
It's so difficult. I mean, to put it in perspective, you know, imagine yourself in the most, you know, unbelievably stressful situation, and, you know, multiply that by 100, and then, you know, have the entire world, you know, looking at you through a microscope. You know, it's very difficult. You know, why do we make some of the decisions that we make? I was paralyzed with fear. I didn't know what my responsibility was, and it scared me. And you know, in that situation, you know, I don't know that I would have been able to, you know, obviously you're not thinking clearly because, you know, in a stressful situation like that, you know, it's quick decisions. You know, I only had a few minutes to, you know, to get ready to get back up on the board. You know, my confidence was shattered as far as with regard to the competition, you know, and this is the Olympic Games.
Now that we know some of the things that were going through your mind during the Olympic dives, tell us what it was like after you hit your head and you got out and you went through this whole crisis knowing that you're HIV positive and, you know, that the doctor was stitching you up. And there you are back on the diving board again. Mm-hmm. You have at least 2 big secrets that you're keeping from everybody while the cameras are on you. And now you have to execute a perfect dive. So exactly how do you get centered enough to execute a perfect dive when you're going through all this turmoil?
Well, it was easier to focus on the dive than it was easier to focus on the dive rather than the HIV.
You know what I thought was interesting, too? In your book, you said that it was in a way easier to do that second dive because since you'd hurt yourself on the dive before, you were now like the underdog, and it was easier for you to compete as the underdog. You felt more comfortable that way.
I've always felt more comfortable, you know, in the underdog position. The one that was expected to win. I mean, people expected me to win every time I got up on the board at one juncture in my career after 84. And, you know, that's a tremendous pressure. It's a tremendous pressure. It was nice to go back to that, you know, to being the underdog. I had to learn how to be a competitor as well. Because that was like a progression, evolution for me as well.
I have another question about keeping things secret. I assume that your publisher suggested that you wait to disclose your HIV status until the book came out so that the attention would promote the book. How did you feel about that, about keeping it a secret until then and timing it to coincide with sale of the book?
You know, going public about your HIV status is something that is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was an intense year of therapy and preparing for this time. I mean, I wanted my views to be able to look at. It's a very complex issue, and I wanted the book to reflect that, and you know, I would have waited until the very last minute, you know, because I'm still adjusting, you know, to having that information out there.
So it was good for you to have the time to prepare.
Yeah, I needed the time to prepare, and which was really very difficult because on the eve of doing Barbara Walters, the Barbara Walters interview, which was the first member of the media that I talked to about my HIV status, my therapist passed away. He died from complications of Crohn's. He was preparing me for this, introducing me to various people in the gay community, getting me prepared mentally for what I was about to embark on. And that was a really difficult loss for me.
Greg Louganis is my guest, and he's written a new autobiography. In your book, you write that although you wouldn't talk about it to the press and you wouldn't say anything in public, that other divers knew that you were gay, and your teammates in the 1980 Olympics knew. And in fact, some of them didn't want to share a room with you because of it.
Mm-hmm. There was a whole fagbuster campaign at one of the competitions. People kind of humming who are you going to call, and not finishing it. What I had to wake up to every morning. We're all in dorms, and so there's a community bathroom and shower area, and there was fag with the Ghostbuster sign through it on the mirrors and signs all over the dorm rooms.
Were other athletes doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, did you have...
Not everybody, though. Not everybody. I mean, there were, you know, a number of supporters that were incredible. I was at that competition. I thought, God, the whole world's against me. And it came down to the last dive. One of the major instigators of that whole fagbuster campaign, he was beating me. And then I looked out into the crowd and I saw Lisa Trombley. Lisa Trombley Bradshaw. She married Mark Bradshaw, who was on the 1988 Olympic team with me. And she looked up at me, and she gave me a thumbs up and a big smile. And I thought, my God, I'm not alone. That I had the support of someone in that crowd. And fortunately, it came out that I did a good enough dive to win. And that's what I always wanted to do, is let my performance, my diving, speak for itself. in a sense, I mean, that's what I allowed it to do.
It sounds in a way maybe you're even more focused on becoming a better diver because so much else about your life was subject to ridicule.
Yeah, I question whether I'd be, if I were better adjusted, whether I would have won four gold medals, you know?
Well, I think so many people who are really talented question whether if it wasn't for what was perceived by others as their defects, if they mm-hmm. wouldn't have developed the talent in the way that they had.
Yeah.
So, but it seems to me you were pretty cut off from a larger gay community during the years that you were publicly in the closet, and that any kind of support or advice that you could have gotten, you didn't get.
Right. Yeah, I mean, any of the hate mail or, you know, letters of disappointment, you know, during those years did come from the gay community, you know, because I wasn't out enough for them. They heard the rumors and all that, and I didn't necessarily, you know, I wasn't necessarily hiding around bushes, you know. It was just that I didn't discuss my sexual orientation to the press and the media.
So some people in the gay community were angry with you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Did they offer any convincing reasons to come out? Not convincing enough, I guess.
No, I was like, well, you know, if you're gonna pay my bills, I mean, I've got no. But
okay, pay your bills. What did you think what did you think the consequences would be if you came out?
Well, with athletes, you have, you know, managers now and agents who are like encouraging you not to discuss your personal life, because if anybody finds out that you even have a personal life, straight or gay, whatever you're doing, I mean, you're going to be criticized and lose endorsements. I mean, that's what, you know, it's a perception that's out there. And you're fed this, and, you know, as an athlete, you know your sport. You don't know the business world. And, you know, you're going to the pool and working out and doing your job. So, of course, you're going to believe somebody who you think is an authority.
My guest is four-time Olympic gold medal winner Greg Louganis. He's written a new memoir called Breaking the Surface. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Greg Louganis is my guest. You started off doing acrobatics and then started diving. And you write in your book that when you started diving, you had to give up acrobatics because in acrobatics, you have to land on your feet, and diving, you land on your head, and it was just really confusing which way you're supposed to go.
Oh God, I remember that workout too. At gymnastics, I was doing a front handspring, and I was like doing a face drop into the mat each time. And I was like, I came back from that workout and a bloody nose, and just like it was horrible.
Yeah, well, you have to deal with gravity, I suppose, in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Tell me more about what the physical difference is when you know you're jumping and you're diving into water head first, and when you're doing somersaults or whatever and you know you need to land on your feet.
Yeah, it's an orientation thing, you know, like a kinesthetic awareness. I guess I found an easier time with finding my head rather than my feet.
Mm-hmm. You know, reading this made me think about how I've always been afraid to dive. I never learned how to dive. I can jump into water from any height, but I could just never bring myself to go head first, even into water.
Well, you have a pool around in your area. We'll meet there, okay?
Yeah, right.
I'll give you lessons.
What would you tell me? What would you tell me?
Well, what do you do? Do you lift your head and then... Like,
oh, I haven't even tried it since I was a kid. No, no.
Not even off the side of the pool?
Mm-mm. No, I you know, what am I afraid of? I don't know. I just couldn't bring my body to do it. I'm afraid of, like, water rushing into my ears or it hurting too much on my stomach. I took a couple of real belly flops when I was a kid.
You're probably just lifting your head. You have to keep your head down and and look, you know, back towards from where you came off from.
What's the best way to get the most boost out of a diving board?
All of that is timing. I mean, and that's something that I learned through, you know, my acrobatics and dance, is, you know, one of my coaches, you know, he kept saying, ride the board, ride the board, ride the board. And I asked him, you know, well, what does it mean, ride the board? And so he said, well, when you push up into your hurdle, then you're going to hear the board bounce against the fulcrum, which is the adjustable rest of, you know, where the board rests. He said, you'll hear the board bounce off the fulcrum twice, and then you'll come down on the board. And so the board became my music. I mean, that's the music that I would be listening to. And listening to the board, it's you know, it's an even beat. So, you know the timing of that. And I would be able to make minute adjustments. You know, whether if I was coming down on the board too soon, I would lift my knees up just a little bit so I'd be in sync with the board. You know, not all divers learned to listen to the board. But I think that they're more aware of that now. Because I just did it. I mean, being taught as a child, I mean, you don't have a perception of, you know, much beyond yourself. So I thought everybody was doing it. It wasn't until later that I started getting into discussions with other divers that, you know, I listened to the board, you know, all the various cues that, you know, that I would be taking in as I'm diving.
When you were competing in the Olympics and the judges would give you your score, did you ever feel that they were wrong?
No. Uh-huh. No, not at all. I mean, it was my job to convince the judges. If they saw something, I didn't really put a whole lot of focus on judges and judging.
Mm-hmm.
I let my coach worry about that. I mean, you know, most of the time I was just out there performing. You know, if they were being a little hard on me, then I had to, you know, put that much more effort forward, you know, to convince them otherwise.
So you've never been angry at a judge who you felt scored you too low?
No, No, not at all.
Do you ever watch performances of your dives?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It was funny because, like, when the Barbara Walters aired, and I finally saw, and I can say this, these beautiful dives. I never could say that before. You know, I'd look at my diving, and you know, and it's like, oh, I was a little bit off here, a little bit off there. Oh, I didn't get my head, you know, up far enough, or something. I was really very critical. But when I saw the Barbara piece, and you know, it was, I saw beautiful diving.
What's changed? Do you think it's because you're not competing anymore that you can see the beauty of it now?
I don't know. I think it's just, it's been, I think a long time coming. I mean, it was very compelling because I remember after my last dive in 1988, you know, I turned to my coach and I said, nobody will ever understand what we've just been through. And with the visuals and then the story that was really going on with me, underscoring the, you know, the visuals of this beautiful diving, it was pretty powerful, and it was close to getting a feel of what we had just been through.
One of the things your book has done is raise the question again, should professional athletes be tested for AIDS? Should Olympic athletes be tested for AIDS? The Olympic Commission said no. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be testing athletes. What do you think?
I think that's an individual decision, individual choice. You know, I would encourage an athlete, if they are sexually active, to be tested. But that's all. But as far as mandatory testing, I'm opposed to that.
So for at least, 6.5 or 7 years, you've been wondering what it would be like if people knew
that you were HIV positive. And for a little less than that, you were wondering what it would be like if people knew you were gay. So now you're out, and the story is out that you're HIV positive. What's different for you? And does it feel better or worse? I know it's probably hard to tell because being in the spotlight in the way that you are right now is a unique experience that's going to color any feeling that you have.
Well, I think I think it's what I deal with in the introduction about no more secrets. I think that that's very powerful. I hope this information. A woman approached an acquaintance of my mom's approached her and said, "Francis, you don't know this, but my daughter committed suicide because of an HIV diagnosis, and she left behind a son." And she said that I had wished that she had lived long enough to hear me say what I had to say. I mean, it's, you know, too late for her, but hopefully, that message is getting out there that, you know, there is life after an HIV diagnosis.
Greg Louganis, he's written a new memoir called Breaking the Surface. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.